What is your all-time favorite hymn? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to vote for your favorite hymn. Send an email with your vote to hymnvote@issuesetc.org, and during the week of August 9th, we'll study the top five hymns chosen by Issues Etc. listeners. Voting ends July 25th. Vote today for your favorite hymn, hymnvote@issuesetc.org. A hymn for any time of the church year is fine. hymnvote@issuesetc.org.
If you have certain causes in place, the occupation of Muslim land, the murder of innocent men, women and children, as in Iraq, in Afghanistan, if you support the enemies of Islam and Muslims like the Israelis who are occupying our land, and if you bring in a whole host of draconian laws against the Muslim community, then this is bound to have a backlash.
That is Anjem Khodri, a Muslim imam in the United Kingdom, justifying attacks in the United Kingdom by Islamic jihadists and attacks elsewhere. He says there's going to be backlash. That's his justification. We're going to hear major portions of a recent CNN interview with a Muslim imam in the UK, Anjem Khodri. And Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us here in the first half hour of the program to respond to some of the arguments that are made. No innocent victims. Islam is misrepresented. Islam is the answer to the world's economic and other problems. Dr. Alvin Schmidt of Illinois College will be our guest live this Wednesday afternoon, July the 21st. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Dr. Schmidt, Dr. Gary Habermas of Liberty University will join us to talk about a scholar in Sweden who says Jesus didn't die on a cross. Not a crucifixion, per se, but some other form of execution. Rita Marco will be with us in the second hour of the program. There are some new Right to Die billboards in Georgia, I believe, from a group that is advocating death with dignity and other euphemisms for euthanasia. We'll see what Rita has to say about that. Dr. Carl Fakencher will join us then to round off today's program, part three of a four-part series with him this summer on law and gospel. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours of the program, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can email us here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is a regular guest. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Thank you.
First of all, so we can get our terms carefully defined from your perspective, when we talk about Islamic jihadists, who are we talking about? How would you define that term?
Well, it's been defined actually 60% of the Quran has Quranic jihadic passages, 60%. Basically, it means, as the Hadith even says, holy war, holy battle. It means to fight the infidels, the unbelievers who are not Muslims, and that is jihad. There is also a psychological component, but for the most part, like, for instance, in the Hadith, there are about four pages devoted to jihad, telling individuals, Muslims, how to carry it out, namely to fight this holy war, this holy battle against people who are not Islamic.
One of the first things that came up in the CNN interview, Fareed Zakaria was interviewing Anjem Khodri, a Muslim imam in the UK, and the issue of his citizenship, or at least his political allegiance, came up. Fareed Zakaria asked, are you British?
I'm a Muslim first and a Muslim last. If I'm in Britain and I have a passport, then that's a travel document. If I was in America, I would have a travel document with an American, institution on it. At the end of the day, you know, our identity is defined by our thoughts and our ideas. My ideology is Islam. It's something I believe in, I live by, and I want to struggle for, and I'm willing to sacrifice for. So, you know, I am determined and I'm defined by what I believe, not where I was born or my lineage or what the government would have me labeled as.
Dr. Schmidt, what do you hear the imam saying there?
Well, when I hear that, a couple of things come to mind. Number one, the man is an honest Muslim. He's an honest jihadist. And then the second thing that comes to mind, I wish that more Americans and people in the West would hear or believe when this is said. It's been said by others here that this is really true. For example, people who are Muslims do really not assimilate into society in which they live. For example, already in the 1960s, before we had any concern with Muslims and jihadists and the like, there was a study published in the 1960s that showed that Arab Muslims in the United States did not assimilate as did other immigrants. In fact, and this was before multiculturalism, before political correctness, it took them at least a generation longer to assimilate into American culture. And that in itself is a very powerful message. We as in the United States believe that, and we were for a long time, a great melting pot, meaning that different ethnic groups came from different parts of the world, and by the second, if not, but certainly by the third generation, they could hardly ever speak the language of their grandparents, and they became Americans. They identified with American values. This is not true to those who are truly Muslims. I was at a academic gathering less than a year ago where some professors naively believed that they would assimilate. And I says, give me the evidence. It isn't happening. It isn't showing. Well, and this is exactly right. This man said, I am a Muslim first and I am a Muslim last, and he will not really saying assimilate. And all true Muslims will say the same thing. Most of them obviously won't echo it. But this man was honest.
Now, as a general principle, does Islam, as it's read out of the Quran, if someone's trying to be faithful to the Quran and the other holy writings of Islam, is there any encouragement within Islamic's theological beliefs to assimilate into any culture foreign to Islam?
No, the very opposite is true. Because if you assimilate, you know, if you assimilate, you give up a lot of the culture and oftentimes religious trappings that you have inherited or brought with you, for example. And if you're going to become assimilated, women would eventually give up wearing a scarf or a burqa, even if you go to more extreme. You would begin to promote, for instance, American values, and they see American values as satanic, coming from the great white Satan. You would celebrate the 4th of July. You would celebrate other American events. Well, they see these as contrary. And because it would ultimately go against what the Quran says and what the Hadith says. So, no, assimilation is not, and you see this in France, you see it in Europe, in all the countries, they are not assimilating. And even in this country, there was a case, a year or two ago when a woman in Florida wanted to take the driver's license with her face veiled. Well, that's an example of not wanting to assimilate into this country. And so, there is no support for assimilation in at all. In fact, what it says in the Quran and in the Hadith is to conquer the unbelieving society, which means you take over their culture as well. And again, that means no assimilation.
Another thing that was brought up by this Muslim imam in the UK on Jem Khoudry was that he believes Sharia Islam, faithful Islam, is not fairly represented by many Islamic countries. Here's what he had to say.
We have today about 55 so-called Muslim countries. None of them are implementing the Sharia. Some of the worst and the most barbaric, in fact, are, for example, the Iranian regime and the Saudi regime. Many people believe that they are Islamic countries, but in fact, they're implementing non-Islamic kufr law. And in fact, you know, this is much more dangerous because when you give it a semblance of Sharia and then you, after that, oppress the people and you implement injustice, you know, it gives the impression that there's something wrong with the Sharia. And that's not the case.
All right. This might come as a surprise to hear a self-professed jihadist say that these countries don't fairly represent Islam.
He is right, and I don't want to, you know, sound immodest, but I have said that a long time, many times, that the Sharia law is sometimes here and there in certain countries of that are Muslim, slightly bent in order to prevent negative publicity from the West. A good case in point is, for example, recently, and this, whether a person who is a woman who's committed adultery, accused of adultery, is going to be stoned or not. Oftentimes, they withdraw that and give other kinds of punishment. Well, when that happens, the Sharia law is being bent or somewhat ignored. And so this man is right. When they are trying to sort of appeal to the West, they modify or they subdue some of the Sharia mandates. And so what he's saying is honest. This guy is extremely honest. And I wish more people who are talking about Islam or those who think that Islam is a moderate in religion should hear a guy like him. Yes, he's right. Sometimes for political advantages, they will, what shall I say, bite their tongue, so to speak, and not implement Sharia law.
With only about 30 seconds, some people might say, my goodness, Saudi Arabia, they have some of the most oppressive human rights violations of in the world, not the most, but some of the most. And the same is true of Iran. If they aren't representative of Sharia, then what would real Sharia actually look like, Dr. Schmidt? About 40 seconds before.
Yeah, well, Saudi Arabia comes pretty close to following it 100%. There are very few variations from Sharia law in Saudi Arabia. For example, a couple of years ago, they permitted a woman to speak, and that caused all kinds of havoc. In Saudi Arabia, a woman may not even wear lipstick. She is not even able to drive a car. So Sharia law is followed pretty strongly. The only thing is, we don't hear much about it. The media keeps us ignorant on the matter.
When we come back from this break, we'll continue our conversation on this Wednesday afternoon, July the 21st, with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of the book The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. We're listening to some excerpts from a recent CNN interview with a Muslim imam in the UK, getting an honest representation of Islamic jihadism. Our call in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. More with Dr. Alvin Schmidt after this. What is your all-time favorite hymn? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to vote for your favorite hymn. Send an email with your vote to hymnvote@issuesetc.org, and during the week of August 9th, we'll study the top five hymns chosen by Issues Etc. listeners. Voting ends July 25th. Vote today for your favorite hymn, hymnvote@issuesetc.org. A hymn for any time of the church year is fine. hymnvote@issuesetc.org.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Catechesis, God's way of teaching faith in Christ and love to the neighbor. The Concordia Catechetical Academy is dedicated to promoting Luther's small catechism and faithful Lutheran catechesis around the world. We are the publisher of the Lutheran Catechesis Series, catechetical materials for use with adults and children, in congregations and on the mission field, in families and in schools. Visit our website at peacesussex.org.
The CLCC has produced a new seminar to help people understand the structure of LCMS churches. So many people today are unaware of their church polity. This seminar can be downloaded for free from the CLCC website, www.theclcc.org. This is available for a seminar, a self-study, or presentations. And think about joining us. Members can download the PowerPoint version for free. Visit us today at www.theclcc.org.
If you are a Muslim practicing, you don't believe in democracy because democracy separates God from alliance affairs and politics. We believe the whole of the system, including the politics and the judiciary, must be according to the Sharia.
This is like having a debate with a pure Marxist, where Marxism has ever been implemented, so you can never test it.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. That's a little snippet from a recent CNN interview with a Muslim imam in the UK, who is a self-professed jihadist. Now, he argues that the problem that has hindered Islam is that it's not been fairly represented and that Sharia has never really been tried because of all this democracy stuff. So that's his answer for why apparently the Muslim masses aren't electing people like, well, Osama bin Laden to be their political leaders. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. Before we go on with more of the audio, what do you make of that logic that democracy is inimical to Islam and therefore true Muslims won't engage in it, therefore they don't elect the people they really want to lead them, like Osama bin Laden?
And he's very right, and he makes a statement that most people have never probably really heard. That, in other words, they don't believe in democracy, so they don't participate. And, you know, there's also a statement he said that if they really were involved, they would probably vote Osama bin Laden into office hands down. And democracy is an antithesis. It's an opposite to Islamic theology. Khomeini, when he took over in Iran back in 79, was famous for saying, Islam is politics and politics is Islam. And you cannot separate the two. The separation of church and state as we have it does not apply to separation of the mosque and religion. It simply is anti-Islamic to even entertain that thought. And it goes back to what we said earlier. It's another example of their not wanting or to assimilate. Because to assimilate in the West means you have to separate the religion from the state.
And when he talks about democracy being, what shall we say, hostile to Islam or Islam hostile to democracy, why exactly is that? What is the
hostile to democracy because democracy, in the Quran's view and the whole Islamic theology, is something contrary to Allah, contrary to God. It's not, you know, we in the West tend to believe the old Greek saying, or the Latin saying, I guess it was, vox populi, vox Dei, the voice of the people is the voice of God, which sort of underscores democracy. You can argue with that statement in many ways, but nevertheless, it does give positive value to people, democratic involvement. And this is contrary to Islamic theology. Islamic theology says it's the imams, and before that it was the caliph that was in rule and charge and operated like a dictator, and that's what they want, not democracy.
Here again is Imam Anjem Khodre talking with Fareed Zakaria of CNN's Global Public Square recently, describing how Islam is the answer to many of the world's problems.
I believe, in fact, America and Britain and much of the West is looking for an alternative. You can see from the credit crunch to the MPs and the
Solution to the credit crunch is Islam? Is
of course
Sharia
it is,
law?
Yeah. I mean, you can talk to me about anything about the economy in the West. I can give you an Islamic alternative.
What is he saying there, Dr. Schmidt?
Well, he's trying to say, for example, I think, as I understand him, that if we were followers of Islam, we wouldn't have any economic problems as we are having them in the West today, whether it's in Greece or whether it's in Europe or whether it's in our own country. That, of course, is a massive overstatement because Islamic countries outside of Saudi Arabia, that is wealthy because of Westerners buying oil from them, Islamic countries are not on the forefront of economic prosperity and never have been.
And yet he seems to present what he calls an Islamic alternative to the West's solutions to many of these problems. What would that look like, really, from what you know of Islam?
Well, it would, number one, mean that democracy would be gone. It would mean that we would be essentially ruled by dictators called caliphs that would probably bring those back, or at least by imams, and that you would have no voice. There would be no criticism in terms of in society once they take over. It would be total capitulation and following their dictates. And this is totally contrary, but we may be heading toward that. This morning I just received an email from the Netherlands from a man who comes from South Africa speaking in terms of the West capitulating and that it will, the way it's going, become Islamic before long. And he's right. He lists a number of reasons why this is happening. And so that's what it would be like. We would be living in a country that would be well, how shall I put it, ruled like under the Nazis, under the Soviet Union, where there's little or no freedom, except in this case it would be a dictatorship of religion, namely Islam.
Now, this next piece of audio from CNN's Global Public Square is a little longer. We just patiently listen, but also has a little bit of crosstalk in it. But I think the point comes across. It has to do with whether or not this imam on Jim Cordray believes that there are, in fact, innocent victims in jihad.
Who are the people who elected the British Prime Minister or the American President?
You may say it's okay.
Let me ask you a question.
So
let
you're saying it's okay?
No, no, I'm asking you a question. Who's the one who elected them?
Let me answer your rhetorical question. What you're saying is that because
I'm asking you a question. Who is the one who elected the President of America or the Prime Minister of Britain?
Yeah. What you're saying is, mm-hmm. because ordinary Americans and ordinary Brits elected their government, mm-hmm. they are fair target to be killed randomly.
What about their support for the Jewish state of Israel? Were they not doing that?
Is that American military force bombing anyone?
Who was giving them billions of dollars over the last 50 years?
Let me ask you something very simple.
Who was behind Sabra and Shatila?
Let me ask you something very simple.
Let me ask you that, though. Sabra and Shatila. Who was behind Sabra and Shatila?
We're either going to end this program or you're going to answer my question.
Who were they funded by? No, but we're having a conversation.
We're having an interview where I'm interviewing you. You claim to be a man of religion. You claim to be a holy man. I want to return to this. Are you comfortable with the fact that what you are advocating is going to mean the death of innocent men, women, and children?
No. What I'm advocating is for the British.
No, it is, because it's already happened. So I just want to know, live with that?
Can I answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm advocating the removal of foreign forces from Muslim countries, stopping the support for the power state of Israel. In return, there can be some kind of normalization between the relations.
How can there be normalization?
But as long as Muslim land is occupied and innocent men, women, and children are killed by the American and British foreign policy, of course there will be repercussions.
But there was no occupation of Afghanistan or Iraq. When 9/11 was being planned, and you were still advocating this kind of thing.
Before that, they were killing innocent Muslims.
Where?
They were killing them in Israel, for example.
American forces.
Of course they were.
My history
is correct. I'm afraid that you're living in the world of CNN.
All right, that's Fareed Zakaria on CNN's Global Public Square interviewing Imam Anjem Cordray. Okay, can you sort that out for us? What exactly the arguments being made by the imam amounted to, Dr. Schmidt?
Well, basically, I think he was saying that if you vote for democratic leaders, whether it's Cameron in England or whether it's a president in this country that we vote for, you are, in essence, fair game to be annihilated by jihadists. However, and I shouldn't say however in the sense of minimizing what he's saying, this is totally in conformity to what the Quran teaches. Let me just read you a passage. I will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve. Therefore, strike off their heads and strike off every fingertip of them. End of quote. It's in the 8th chapter of the Quran. Now, here it is not even talking about people having voted in certain leaders. It means anybody who is a disbeliever or an unbeliever. And, of course, if you vote for somebody into office in democratic fashion, you are a disbeliever because you're violating what basic Islam teaches. And so you have it right there. He is sort of trying to justify it in a way by saying that they voted for this or are supporting Israel, therefore they're fair victims. In reality, they don't have to do anything. The only thing they have to do is not be a Muslim, and they're fair game. So that's really at the core of it. He hasn't and didn't say that quite clearly, but that's underlying it. For example, Muhammad himself said, quote, "Whoever changes his religion, kill him." Again, that's jihad in practice. And so if you change your religion from a Muslim to a non-Muslim, kill them. So fair game. The victim is acceptable in the eyes of Allah, as they would see. So that's basically what I understand him saying.
We only have 1 minute. I want your thoughts on the Pope preparing to visit the UK in September and Muslims preparing to show their displeasure with what they see as an insult to the Prophet Muhammad recently. Only a minute, Dr. Schmidt, for your thoughts.
Yes, in 2006, Pope Benedict XVI gave a speech at the university in Bavaria at the university. And in his speech, he quoted from a 14th century Byzantine emperor, Manuel II, Palaiologos. And in that particular speech, by quoting him, pointed out that, here's the exact quote, "Show me just what Muhammad thought that was new, or brought that was new. And there you will find things only evil, inhuman, such as the command to spread by the sword the faith he preached. Well, the Pope received an awful lot of flack in that, and he slightly backtracked, because later on he said, quote, "I have for the Quran the respect due to the holy book of a great religion." And the firestorm didn't quite die down, and he tried to say that he wasn't trying to impugn anything but religion. But what he said from that quotation of this Greek Byzantine ruler, the second last, I might say, before Constantinople was conquered in 1453, indicates very clearly that he said something that they didn't like, and of course it caused a big firestorm. It even caused some killings of Catholic people in different parts of the in the different parts of the world. And so he backtracked a little bit, and I figured he would, but the firestorm probably will never totally die.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Folks, when you purchase The Great Divide using the Amazon.com link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. IssuesETC.org. Click Listen on Demand and look for The Great Divide by Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When we come back from this break, Dr. Gary Habermas will join us. We're going to talk about a scholar in Sweden who says Jesus didn't die on a cross. It was some other form of Roman execution. Dr. Gary Habermas of Liberty University on Issues Etc. right after this. Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Faithful confession trumps company loyalty. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Planned Parenthood of Iowa is doing so-called telemed chemical abortions known as RU486. It's more like a vending machine abortion. The pregnant woman talks with an abortionist not in person but by a computer monitor. After a brief time with no physical exam, she pushes a button that opens a drawer dispensing the lethal medication. Chemical abortion is dangerous, especially when given in this fashion. Pro-life Iowans are appealing it to the medical board. We need to hear from any woman who's had a bad experience with chemical abortion, regardless of her location. We also want to hear from any doctor who's treated a woman with a bad experience. We'll pass it along. Please visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org to share your information.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.